So we met in this bar, and I remember this is so bad. The first trick I did for him was the there's a Jerry Sadowitz trick which involves three 4-letter words, which we won't go into on a public podcast, but it's like one of the most offensive, brutal card tricks ever, which I love. So I did that for him, which I think kind of made him a bit scared. See, I told you that there was a point to that story, and we got there in the end. I'm sorry about wasting your precious moments of your life, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be honest, more gentlemen than ladies listening to this podcast. But we got there in the end.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Desert Island Tricks. Another week, another magician, another performer, and this one is a doozy. I think at the time of recording, I can't say because these are going out in random orders, this is our first magician who has been a part of a BAFTA award-winning TV show. Oh, that's big, big shoes to fill. He's smiling as if to say, oh no. What am I going to do here? So today's guest is another person I've spoken to. We just discussed this, funny enough. Spoken to him for quite a few years, but we've never met in person, as is always the way with magicians and magic. So I sort of gave a little bit of clues there. He is an incredible creator of magic. He's a really deep thinker when it comes to magic as well. He's been all over TV in different ways, in theatre as well. He's been involved in some really incredible theatre pieces over the years. You would have seen him from companies like BBM, Big Blind Media, who we've also had a couple of people on who have been a part of BBM as well. And of course, the TV show that I was on about, Help My Supply Teacher Is Magic, which I used to really enjoy watching. I thought it was such a clever idea and a clever premise. And James was so good on it. So today's guest is Mr. James Went. Hello, James.
Hello. We've reached the bottom of the barrel, folks.
Not at all. Yeah, so you've had quite a big old career, really, in our industry.
Yeah, it's weird though, because like a lot of it happened pre-COVID, and like so much has changed in the last few years. I've forgotten. I found myself going, oh yeah, I did that thing once, that was cool. Like I forget loads of it, but yeah, I've been really lucky to do quite a lot with some amazing people and learn loads along the way as well. Every little thing I did was like a huge learning curve.
I would have said that you're quite an analytical thinker as well when it comes to magic. I think you're quite good at really thinking about concepts and understanding them and trying to pick everything you can out of that concept.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Obsessive, I think is the word. or picky. I've got a really high threshold for what I think is good. And certainly for things that I would choose to perform and or enjoy, because I generally think it's probably the Welsh in me, the Welsh Valley boy, just like saying everything's rubbish. That's rubbish. So when I find something that's genuinely good or something that I can sort of look at and appreciate one element of, then I'm keen to sort of dig away at it and see what I can get out of it, which makes me sound a lot cleverer than I actually am. I'm just a bit of a nerd, really.
And you recently came back from the castle, haven't you? Just recently, yeah, at time of recording.
So, yeah, as we record this, it's currently February the 26th, and I believe the new Alakazam thing is going to premiere tomorrow, so I'll give that a quick little plug. I've just had a sneak preview, and it looks very, very exciting. But, yeah, it's February, and this year I've already done 10 days in Nashville and 10 days in Los Angeles, so it's been insane. So I went out to beginning of January. I did 7 days. Was out in Nashville for 10 days. Had a venue called the House of Cards out there, which was great. Such a cool venue. And then I was back for 10 days, so just got over the jet lag, and then I was off to Los Angeles to do the Magic Castle for the second time with Dave Forrest and Roddy McGee, who just both brilliant.
They are. They're both incredible, and we can't not talk about very quickly Help My Supply Teacher is Magic. Yeah.
That's a long time ago now.
It was, but it was such a good idea. It was such a clever idea. I always hoped that they'd sort of done an adult version where they went to like universities and pretended to be lecturers sort of upscaled it to be a bit more wacky. I think that would have been great.
There was a show, I'm not sure if, so the company that did Supply Teacher, I mean, bear in mind now, this is like, I think we finished Supply Teacher 10 years ago this year, I think, or it was either 2013, 2014. But I think there was a show that was a precursor to Supply Teacher, which was a hidden camera show that John Archer was in, who obviously ended up being in Supply Teacher with us. And that was like hidden camera, but it was more sort of locations. So like in shopping centers and, you know, places like that. But yeah, I mean, it was a blast to do. I mean, it was a huge learning curve, having not done any television before Supply Teacher, and learning how that machine works and how different it is to perform on TV. I mean, and that's the thing, it's like things have changed so much since then. Like, you know, YouTube was about then, and AGT and BGT and all that kind of stuff. But like, it used to be that if you wanted to get on TV, the only way to do it was to be part of some kind of TV production company and to do a show. Whereas now, you know, we got things like Fool Us, we got things like BGT and AGT and all that kind of stuff. So it provides a platform for magicians to get on TV. But I'm guessing, having never done any of those things, the whole machine functions differently when it's part of a TV show, and, you know, and you've got your own production crew, and you've got, you know, scripting sessions and development sessions, and then, you know, the day of the shoot. But yeah, I mean, I could talk about it for ages, but I won't. It was cool. And, you know, working with Anthony Owen, love him, he's not around anymore. He literally changed my life by giving me a slot on that show, because I was nobody. And, you know, I worked pretty hard for the audition. He hopefully saw something in me that was worthwhile. But yeah, man, Anthony changed everything. If it wasn't for Anthony, then they wouldn't have been, you know, I ended up working on the Darren shows, and I ended up doing some sort of production and some development ideas for other TV shows and theater, and, you know, it's all thanks to him, really. So give him a quick shout out.
Yeah, he was awesome. I remember he once gave me a piece of advice, Anthony Owen, and it's one of those things that's always stuck with me. He said, because at the time I was trying to get into acting and getting into musical theater and stuff like that when I'd left university, and he said to me, if you can't find a show to be in, then cast yourself in your own show. So go out, write your own show, and then they'll have to put you on wherever you are. Yeah. And it's always been one of those little things which has stuck with me.
Yeah, he was just the best, and so kind and generous. Yeah, love him. There's so many stories. Some of them I can't say. we had a lot of fun together.
Hey, artists. Ever feel like you're navigating your career alone? I'm Adam Botsford, and in my new podcast, That Wonderful State, I'm sharing an inside look at art and business. I'm also bringing in artists from all walks of life to share their stories, advice, and lessons learned. In these interviews, I ask artists ranging from published illustrators to gallery experts to share their know-how in direct layman terms. Whether you're just starting out or deep in the hustle, That Wonderful State is here to help you bypass the gatekeeping and get a look at things from the inside. So grab your coffee and a sketchbook, and let's figure this out together. Subscribe to That Wonderful State wherever you get your podcasts, and keep being amazing.
So with that being said, let's take you away to your desert island, and let's find out. I'm super interested. Normally I make a guess. I'm going to say that yours is going to be, well, you've had your hand in mentalism with Darren shows. So I would have said maybe some mentalism, but I would presume that it's going to be quite cardsy because you are a card fan.
It is quite cardsy. I mean, do you know, it's not mentalism, because having done the Darren stuff, I don't really perform that much mentalism anymore, because why would I bother? He's literally the greatest there's ever been. It's like, what's the point? what is the point? So yeah, lots of cardy stuff, but I don't know, maybe some surprises. I'm not sure. I should say, as a caveat, the stuff on my list isn't necessarily stuff I've performed either. It's stuff that I've really enjoyed, or stuff that the first time that I saw it had like a really big impact, and I thought, oh, that is really something quite special. So I've tended to go for that rather than, I'm going to put the ambitious card on because, you know, everybody's got an ambitious card. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, hopefully. I'm quite stressed about it now. Now that we're actually going to do it. It's like, oh, God. Okay, cool.
Okay, so we are going away to your desert island. So what is the item in your first position?
Okay, so numero, and these are in no order by any, you know, these are just the order I've written them down. So the first thing that I would take to my desert island of tricks is The Destination Box by John Allen. Because I think as far as card to impossible locations go, it's just the best. It is so good. And because obviously John has a version which is the clear plastic box, so, you know, not be disparaging to that as a plot, but to me and my taste, if you can see something that's in the box and it's there from the beginning, I don't think there's any mystery in it. It's just, all right, well, that's where the card's going to be because I can see a card in that clear box. Whereas, you know, like, I know the way John does it and the way I do it, I'm not sure if it's the same or not. Like, you bring the box out and it's just a box. Like, nobody has any idea why it's of any importance whatsoever. And it's kind of like an abstract, weird thing you bring out at, like, I use it at tables if I'm doing like a banqueting thing. But then at the end, when the card disappears after, like, you know, you're 6, 7, 10 minutes at the table, whatever it is, and then you say, oh, by the way, I gave you a box to start. It's that beautiful moment, which I love in magic, of the audience start putting the pieces of the puzzle together themselves. So they're like ahead of you going, no way is it in the box. No way is it in the box. So you get that beautiful build. So when you kind of finally show it, and plus the way the prop is sort of designed is so clean. It's so clean at the end when you pop that little, you know, the little pill capsule box open, and there's a folded card in there, which is not just a standard Mercury fold. It's like folded again. So it seems even more impossible. Like, it's that beautiful thing of, oh, no way, no way, no way. And then it is. So you just get that great reaction. Whereas I don't know, and I'm saying this having never performed a clear box version. I'm assuming if I did the same thing and then I drew attention to the box, there'd be, it's just that thing of, well, of course it's going to be in the box because I saw there was a playing card in the box from the beginning. And it can be freely handled. They can't do anything with the prop that can, you know, somewhat damage it. Like, if you think of the way that a standard mystery box is constructed, which I love, by the way, I've got a normal mystery box over there. You know, if they maybe open it or you have to put the thing and put in elastic bands around it, which just makes it look cheap. You know, I tend to do it. I have this one routine that I do if I work close up, and depending on the environment, I either use the, you know, standard card to envelope thing, or as in, you know, with the JOL wallet, or I use the destination box, and the destination box just absolutely kills. It's a beautiful prop. The thinking behind it, the routining, how you get into it is just all good, all kinds of good. So that is first on my list.
And the way that you've routined it, just this is just me being nosy now. It's not really, really part of the trick. Have you routined it so that it's something that you introduce at the beginning of a set and then you come back to it at the end of the set, or do you use it just in its individual routine?
No, basically I approach it, and I think pretty much everybody who does it in this way. You approach the table, you give the box out, you do your normal sort of nonsense. Hopefully they clap and laugh in some places if you're half decent. And then at the end, a card vanishes and it's in the box. And it's that lovely thing of, this is going to be a long podcast, man. I'm so sorry. I'm a big fan of shows rather than tricks. Like, rather than, like, when I did the Magic Castle stuff, and even when I do table or close up, I never wanted to feel like a bunch of tricks that I'm doing one after another. I want it to feel like a complete thing that is a start, middle, and end. And the wonderful thing about the destination box is I can get that. So I can hand the box out in the beginning. That's your first moment. I can come back to it at the end. That's my big finale. And then the stuff I do in the middle sort of is neither here nor there, really, because I've still got that arc. Whereas if I just did an original, like if I just did the version where I use the card to wallop, it's exactly the same set. But because I didn't give an object out at the beginning, there's no callback. So therefore, it's now just a series of tricks.
Yeah, great. Really, really strong first choice. I know that you didn't say that they're any particular order, but in terms of the first one that you said, that's such a good one. Any form of destination boxy sort of routine is just killer.
He just helped me out massively by sending me as you said, I can have honourable mentions. So this isn't really an honourable mention for a trick, but it's a great prop. The what's it called? The perfect score thing.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Really smart. Yeah. So I did a thing at the castle that required that particular, should we say, manipulation of a card. And it's great because it's literally a perfect fold every time. It's great.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
Well done, John. Well done.
Well done indeed. So let's go to your second item. What's in your second position?
All right. So I must give Dave Forrest props for this because I listened to his podcast the other day and he had a few Sankey things on there. And I didn't. And I thought that's a terrible misjustice that I have to fix because I think we're kind of at the stage now where Sankey has put out so much and is kind of, I don't want to say dormant, but there was that time maybe sort of 10, 15 years ago, it was like every week was the new Sankey release and it was like new DVDs, new props. And, you know, it was great. But then he kind of stopped releasing stuff in the same way. And I think because there's an entire generation of magicians now who've gone into magic since then that have maybe missed out on just how great some of that stuff was. Like, what did Dave mention? Dave mentioned the back in time thing. And yeah, I can't remember what the other Sankey trick was.
It was paperclipped.
Paperclip. I mean, you know, like paperclip, man. It's so good. Talk about like, you know, card to impossible locations. Like paperclip is phenomenal. However, I've not gone for those. I've gone for one of my favorites. I say one of my favorites because there's lots and lots and lots of Sankey tricks that I love. I have gone for, drumroll please, In a Flash, which is just such a great little piece of theater. Not only is it a brilliant trick, but, you know, it's just a wonderful spectacle and a real moment, which I used to perform all the time and I don't anymore, which is kind of wrong, really. I don't know why I stopped performing it. But yeah, it's always a highlight at the table. So if you don't know the trick, if you're listening to this and you're not really that familiar with Sankey, it's effectively the way I would structure it is someone would think of a card. You can do it with a signed card, but I would have someone think of a card. You borrow a coin. The coin is wrapped up in a bit of inverted commas tissue paper and put on top of a deck. So I used to put like a wine glass in the middle of the table with a deck on the top of it and then this little coin wrapped in it. And then in a flash, literally in a flash, the paper burns off. And then when you look at the deck, there's a hole that's being burnt through the deck and it stops on one particular card. And the card that is stopped on is their card, which, like, if you didn't know the method and you'd never seen that trick before and you just listened to that as a trick explanation, that's got to be one of the best close-up tricks ever, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, somebody thinks of a card, a coin is wrapped up in some paper, which then burns through the deck in a huge ball of fire and stops at the precise location where your spectator audience member's card lies. I mean, like, what is there not to like about that? It's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So well done, Jay Sankey, on being a bloody genius. And that's just like one thing. I mean, we did Airtight on Supply Teacher. Is it Airtight, the one with the balloon?
Mm-hmm.
Did that. That's like just crazy good. Paperclipped is great. You know, Back in Time is great. I've already mentioned those. I'm trying to rack my brain now for other Sankey tricks. My mind's gone blank, but there's so much good stuff. But mm-hmm. In a Flash for me, because it's just that moment of, you know, imagine being an audience member, a complete layman, right? And you're at a dinner, and then that happens in the middle of your table. It's just crazy. It's crazy good.
Mm-hmm. We've had In a Flash before on the podcast.
Oh, do you know who mentioned it? Do you remember? Are you allowed to say?
I can't remember. But by the time your one's released, we will know who said that one.
Whoever it is, they've got great taste.
100%. And if I was to pick a Sankey trick, mine would be In a Flash. But something you just said was really interesting. You said it's a piece of mini theatre, and I think that's bang on the money what that routine is. It's not just a trick. It is, there's like an arc narrative. You have the card selected, so they sort of know where they're going. Then you take a coin. What's a coin got to do with anything? Then you wrap it in tissue paper, which is bizarre. Why would you do that? You put it on top of the deck, and then you get the real impactful visual moment of the coin going through the deck with the flash. And then there's that moment where their brains are catching up with what's going on. Their brains are going, oh, the coin's gone through the deck. And then you say, but it's stopped at one card. And then they're catching up again. So then their brain's going, oh, that couldn't possibly be. And then they inspect everything because everything's examinable at the end of it. They can check everything.
And there's scorch marks on the top of the deck, which is a nice little byproduct.
Absolutely.
It looks like it should look.
It is. You're right. It's a piece of theatre. The whole thing is dramatic, to say the very least.
Just kind of, I don't know how to say this in a way that's not going to be incredibly pretentious and self-important, because that's not what I'm trying to get across. But in the stuff that I choose to perform, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for just cool tricks. When I perform, it's an opportunity for an audience to spend time with me, and the tricks are there as the vehicle to facilitate that time. Each one of those tricks should, in and of itself, and the entire thing, feel like a complete arc. Whereas I think sometimes, and I'm not pointing fingers or naming names or putting myself above or below anybody else, but I think a lot of times when you have performers who are not necessarily that confident in their own ability to sort of converse or perform with an audience, you end up with people just doing tricks as the shield. So rather than having a performer with an audience and the tricks are the vehicle, all of a sudden the tricks are everything and they're just facilitating the tricks underneath. Mm-hmm. Which is when you get that, oh yeah, we saw an amazing magician at this wedding a few weeks ago. What was his name? I don't know, but he did this thing, you know, and that's where you get that. So I don't know. For me, everything that I try and do is a small piece of theatre or facilitates the overall show in some way.
I think
there Ken, I'm off my high horse now. Sorry.
Ken Dine had a really good saying where he said, the audience should be just as interested about me as they are the magic.
Yeah, well, that was weirdly, and this is going to sound really odd, but the act that I just did at the castle, part of my, so it was like almost like a personal challenge underneath it all was, would the audience still be interested in watching me if the tricks weren't there? So is the script as strong? Am I being as entertaining? Is there a story that they can latch on to the point where if I took the actual tricks away, would they still be entertained for 15 minutes of watching some slightly chubby, bald Welshman prattle on stage? And I hope we achieved it, which has kind of left me conflicted because I think I achieved it. But then I also, you know, the magician ego in me kind of wants to go back and add more tricks. So I don't know, it's conflicted. But yeah, that's kind of the thing. Anyway, where were we? Trick number three.
Yeah, very, very, very good choice, though. Very good choice. I think we're going to have a lot of Sankey on our
and so
top,
you should. I mean, he is one of the greatest magic creators of all time. And that's, as I said, like, I think there's a generation of magicians who maybe started within the last 10 years who aren't necessarily familiar with his material. Or if they are familiar with it, they just realize that, you know, there's the three big books out with Vanishing Ink, which everybody should own because they're just so much good stuff in there. Yeah, you should be on the list. I mean, he's phenomenal. Which nicely leads me into our next one, because it's someone who isn't as, I don't want to say established, but hasn't got the long history that someone like Sankey does. However, it's someone who I genuinely think is one of the smartest, best creators of crazy stuff that I wouldn't have thought of him in a million years. Mr. Roddy McGee, who I'm not sure if you're having on the podcast, but you should, because he's just a lovely man. I've just spent 10 days with him in LA, and everybody still liked each other at the end of the trip, so that's always a good thing. But he's great. And this is the thing, I should say as a caveat, I could pretty much put any one of Roddy's tricks on my list, because they're all just great. And I think the other thing is, well, I sort of learned having spent time with him, it's not so much the fact that the thinking behind the tricks is great. It's like Roddy makes all his gimmicks himself. Like, he makes that stuff. And some of it is so involved and complicated, I wouldn't have the patience to make one, let alone like the thousand that he has to make for, like, you know, Murphy's or a Penguin order or however it works. I don't know. I'm not in that game. But yeah, he's a smart cookie. I could have named Flux, which I remember the first time I saw Flux, I was just blown away. I thought it was incredible. It was like genuine David Blaine style TV magic. So honorable mention to Flux. Little Door is obviously phenomenal. He's got this new one out, which I'm not sure the name of, but it should be, I think it's out by the time this podcast comes out. It's a moving hole trick. Have you seen it?
Yeah, so we featured it in the...
I don't think it's out yet, is it?
It was at Blackpool, so he was selling it at Blackpool, and it's in, we did vlogs for Alakazam, and we featured it in one of the vlogs, so you can see it being performed in one of them.
It's, the best moving hole trick I've ever seen. So honorable mention to that one. However, the one that I've gone for is the first one that I ever saw when I was first introduced to Roddy by, I think it was either Dave Forrest or Mark Alsden at a Magic conference. It was either Blackpool, which I, as I said earlier, I haven't been to Blackpool for so long. It was either Blackpool or the Session, but I remember one of them saying, "You've got to meet my friend Roddy. He's like, he's got this great stuff and you should see this one trick." And he did, drumroll please, this is the one I'm going for, Sewn On. And I believe it's called Sewn On. I think he put it out with Dave through Full 52. But effectively, it's just one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And seeing it up close and in person with no knowledge of who Roddy was before this point, was just like, what? Who is this guy? And what is that? Like, what is it? Effectively, it's a button that is removed from a garment and then magically put back onto a garment. But the moment at which it gets reattached is just phenomenal, because you've got like this little baggie with thread in it, and you literally just like rub it on your hoodie. He did it with on a hoodie, and it just all of a sudden there's no thread in the bag. Another button is like sewn on, and you can pull on the button, and it's amazing. Like, who thinks of that? Who thinks of that? Who thinks, I know what the world needs? A relocated button effect. If the fictional company Acme designed the perfect magician to create stuff for that company, for the cartoons.
Literally that. Not. Yeah, yeah, 100%. It's just
this weird, like, you're never going to see Roddy do Ambitious Card. You know what I mean? Like, he just does some mad, mad stuff. I should say honorable mention, by the way, and I don't know if he'd want me to say this, but we were at, this is going to sound so LA, we were hanging out at the Rainbow on the Sunset Strip in LA, and some people came over or whatever, and he did his version of Stand Up Monty, which is the best version I've ever seen, and I'll just leave it there.
Oh, that's a tease if ever there was one.
It is a tease. It was great. It's nothing extra, but his routining of it is really quite wonderful.
Wow. Right. I'm going to have to send him a message now just to find out.
Don't, because then he'll have a go at me for telling you. But yeah, he's great.
We realise that this is a public podcast, right? So it's more than just us.
Yeah, I get it. But there's three or four people listening to this right now, because it's my pod. It's my interview bit, so it's not going to be a big poll, is it? Let's be honest. So the three or four people who are interested in Faro Shuffle locations, then great. But this is where you hide something in print. Hide it on my podcast.
So that brings us to your halfway point. What's in your fourth position?
My fourth position is one of my favorite close-up tricks of all time. Not only is this one of my favorite close-up tricks, I believe it may also be at least one of the tricks that secured me a TV show with Supply Teacher, because I did it in my audition, and it was before it was released. So I was lucky, because obviously Roddy was introduced to me through a friend. So I saw Sewn On before it was released and just thought it was amazing. But I also saw this next trick by one of my favorite creators before it was released, because he's a friend of mine. And I was like, you have to tell me what that is, because I need it in my life immediately. And it is, drumroll please, a trick called Timeless by Liam Montier. Because Liam is a clever cookie who should be a magic superstar, because his material is so good. But unfortunately, he likes crisps too much. So I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying that he'd prefer to be at home with a bag of crisps than, you know, doing all the YouTube and all the self-publicity stuff. But he is a smart cookie. He's got some very, very clever. I mean, look, it's not Henry Sugar, but honorable mention to Henry Sugar, because that is just a wonderfully well-constructed creative trick. But effectively, you have a watch that you take off your wrist. You have someone fairly pull the little stem out and change the time while the watch is face down. You cleanly show them the watch. Just they say, okay, remember what time that is? It goes in their hand. They hold they've got the watch in their hand. You read their mind, tell them what time they're thinking of, And then as a kicker, and what a kicker, as you say, the cool thing is there's no hands on our watch. And then they look at the watch and it's completely examinable. There's no hands. There's nothing awkward that needs to be stolen off it or added onto it at any point during the routine. You know, once it's prepped, you're set. And I did it in my, let me see, second audition for supply teacher. And the props weren't available at the time, so I had to go and have a prop made for it. And I did it for Andy Nyman, who you might know from various Alakazam releases and just all around being just a cool guy. And yeah, his reaction when the arms disappeared was nothing short of spectacular. I believe he told me to go F myself, which was just everything I wanted. Timeless. It's great. But then, like, Liam's got loads of cool stuff, you know. But Timeless is the one because it's got that, like, sort of special memory for me having done it. And, like, God, I was so nervous that day. I was absolutely terrified. Because the auditioning panel was David Britland, who, if you're into cards like I am, like, you'll know Britland is, you know, a legend. Nyman, who I was a huge fan of. And I say fan, obviously, if he's in the past tense, I'm still a big fan of him. I love him. And Anthony Owen. So that's quite the auditioning panel to be in front of. I should also say a big shout out to Anthony Waldron, who's an unsung hero of magic, who was also in the room at the time. But yeah, it was the trick that kind of, it was the second trick I did that day. And it was the one that got me over my nerves. Because when I got that reaction, I was like, okay, if nothing else works, this is cool. I've got this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Timeless, man. I'm kind of sad that it came out because I wanted it all to myself. But again, it's one of those tricks where it's kind of flown under the radar a bit. I don't know if many people do it or are familiar with it, but if you don't do it, then you should. And if you aren't familiar with it, then you should definitely go and check it out along with all of Liam's other stuff. And he always, if you buy anything from Kmart, just give a quick little plug to Kmart. He also includes sweets in the packet. I bought two tricks off him the other day and it appeared with a lovely note and two Mawams. So I was very happy reading the instructions for the tricks and chewing on a Mawam at the same time.
Yeah, he's wicked. I remember when, so Liam showed me Timeless however many years ago now. And obviously because it's a public podcast, we can't talk methods, but no. It was one of those ones where the trick just gets you. If you've never seen it before and you're not aware of what's happening, it will quite honestly make your brain. I would say it's sort of like the first time you see an Omni deck. The first time you see that deck of cards turn to glass and you can't fathom how that was done. It's the same with Timeless. As soon as you realize the hands are gone, everything just implodes in your brain.
How do you backtrack it? As a spectator, how do you backtrack that moment? Literally. You just saw hands on that watch. I remember when I saw it and I just had no idea. And then he showed me what it was. I was like, no, it's not that. It can't be that. It's the kind of thing, right? Say if somebody submitted to a magazine, for example, in the trick section, you'd read it and go, yeah, nice one. That's never going to work. But it does. And it's the best.
Yeah. That's a solid number four. And that takes us over your halfway point. So what's in your fifth position?
Okay, so Dave said he would inflict physical harm upon me if I didn't mention one of his tricks. But when he said that, I'd already had one of his tricks on my list. And again, Dave is a smart cookie. And what I love about Dave is he kind of really straddles those two camps of crazy gimmick stuff and really cool sleight of hand stuff. You don't really tend to find many creators who exist in both worlds that they've, you know, they got the chops that they can do some serious card work, but then by the same time their brain functions in a way that they can come up with these crazy things with like magnets and fraps and whatever that stuff is, you know. But Dave really does that, and I'm a big fan of Dave and always have been. And he's a friend, which I pay him for monthly, but that's a different thing altogether. But this is so honorable mention to Colourburn, just before I say what it is, because Colourburn is, I think, one of the best color changing decks I've ever seen. And again, when he showed me the method to that, I didn't believe him. I didn't think it would be that because it just looks too high tech to be what it actually is. However, the trick that I'm picking from him is Nothing in Transit, which I should, as I mentioned, like there's a few tricks on this list that I haven't actually performed. I've never performed Sewn On by Roddy, and I've never physically performed Nothing in Transit. But I remember he showed me this. It was a Blackpool, God, however long ago it was. And it was day one. It was the Friday. It was like they just opened up. I made a beeline for Dave because, you know, he's a friend. And it was just, I don't know if I saw him the night before or whatever. So it's like, oh, I'll go say hello to Dave before he gets like too busy. I remember seeing him and going, oh, cool, man. So, you know, what you got coming out? And he go, I got this new thing. And he showed me the very first version of Nothing in Transit, which now he has Nothing in Transit 2 that's available from 452.com. I should say that. Not that I'm being paid to say it, but you should go buy it. He showed me the very first version, and it was in like a little cardboard box, like the packaging. It was like so low tech at the time because it was new. Little cardboard box with a sticker on the front of it. And I think it was the only trick that I've ever seen where my money was out of my wallet before the trick finished. Like, he didn't even get to the end of the trick, which is the best bit. And I was like, I want that right now. Because he had, like, he's always very kind. And, you know, he's always sorted me out with, like, freebies and stuff over the years because we're mates and whatever. But I think he only had, like, 20 or something that he'd made up for Blackpool. Because it was like, a prototype thing. And my money was out of my pocket. I want to buy this right now. I need it in my life. And it's amazing. And the new version's even better. But Dave's a great creator. And I think... it's one of those things where I don't think there's any point in anybody else ever coming up with a moving hole plot of this nature because Dave's completed it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything else you can add. Much like Roddy's new thing with the, I know that's a moving hole thing in slightly different context, but I can't see how that plot can get any better than, you know, Dave for that way of doing it and Roddy for the other way of doing it. They're great. And Dave's a clever guy.
It's that moment at the end for me when I first saw Nothing in Transit, when the whole... moves down, but then he lifts the card up and you see the hole, and then it just blows your brain out.
And then everything's examinable at the end as well. So like you know, you can give the bits out and they're like, what have I just seen? Again, it's like that Inner Flash thing where you know what? Like imagine like not, you know, you go into it as a magician and you're conditioned to a certain extent of seeing like unbelievable things. So you're already kind of primed to see something amazing. But imagine just being a punter who isn't really au fait, should we say, with magic, has never seen like a magician before, and then you pull that back out of the bag. You know, it's like what? Like what just happened? That is insane. That's the stuff of cartoon. It's great. I love it. And I love Dave. He's great.
He's a very, very smart cookie. And he comes up with some really, really cool things as well.
Yeah, it's bloody frustrating, isn't it? Yeah.
You said it.
Most of my friends are really clever. they show me the stuff that they come up with. And I'm like, oh, that's great. And then I sit and wallow in self-pity because I've never come up with anything like that. But yeah, I'm lucky to know some really clever people. Shout out on that as well. I should say that, I mean, everybody should be familiar with Slightly Obsessed on Instagram, Andy Frost, who's a friend of mine who just, I don't see him as much as I'd like to, but he always fools me. And he's just your, you know, regular deck of 52 cards, you know, very little in the way of gimmickry, but he will destroy your brain. And also another two guys who I used to spend a lot of time with when I was working in London, a guy called Brad Hodgings, who is one of the best kept secrets in Magic. Like, nobody knows who Brad is, but Brad is probably, I'd probably go as far as to say he's got the best hands I've ever seen. Like, it doesn't matter what the trick is. He just... is wonderful. And Ross Taylor, who some people might be sort of familiar with as well. Those three guys are just phenomenal. We used to meet up regularly, less so Andy at the time, but me, Ross and Brad used to meet up a lot, and just it would be one mission, and that would be to fool each other. That would be the thing. What have we got this week that we can fool each other with? It was great. Anyway, sorry, just saying about how lucky I am to have good friends.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know about all the exciting things happening here at Alakazam Magic. We have brand new releases every single month and live streams every Tuesday, so there's so much content to dive into. We ship every single day. If you're in the UK and your order goes to over £40, we ship it to you for free. If you're international and your order amounts to over £70, we ship it for free, fully tracked. And if you live in the United States, we get it sent from our California branch, which means you have cheaper shipping, faster shipping, and no import duties. Can't get any better than that. Honestly, there's so much to discover here at Alakazam, including the monthly newsletter we've all ordered. We have our own live academy where the world's biggest names in magic teach the best tricks in the world. And it's live, so you can interact and ask any questions you like. We have so many exciting things happening here at Alakazam, so make sure you follow us on all social media, Facebook and Instagram, to find out the latest news. Cheers, guys, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
So that brings us on to your sixth position. What's in your sixth place?
I thought, knowing my tastes, I thought that there would be more sleight of hand stuff in my list. But so far, if you notice, it's pretty much all marketed items, which is funny because I don't really perform a lot of marketed items. Most of my stuff is sleight of hand or stuff that I've sort of come up with, mainly because I'm lazy. And I just, if I have to start carrying too many props around, then I'll break one or I'll forget one or I'll do something. Anyway, so this is, I guess, the first sleight of hand thing that I've included. And it is by one of my favorite creators in magic, who I'm very lucky to be able to call a friend, even though I don't see him that often. Mr. John Bannon of John Bannon fame, one of the best card trick creators of all time. I think you'll agree. And again, there are so many different tricks that I could choose from this. I've got all of Bannon stuff, and you know, I was lucky enough to be on the BBM stuff with him, and you know, through Owen, I've met him a few times, and you know, we've hung out. But the one I am choosing is probably, I think I'd go as far as to say this is the first proper inverted commas card trick that I ever got shown by a inverted commas proper magician. Many years ago, because I got into magic quite late. I was 25 when I got into magic. So it's a bit of a weird story, really. I got into magic in a very bizarre way, but long story short, I was 25 and I started learning a few tricks. I didn't know anything about self-working tricks. So the first book I got was Card Zones by Jerry Sadowitz, which is like, what? That's my first card book, which is madness, right? Because I didn't know like what an Elmsley was. I didn't know what a cover pass was. I remember I was reading one trick and it was like, I got about halfway down because I managed to like research some of the moves. I got like Basic Card Technique by Richard Kaufman. There was like at the time a great encyclopedia of basic card sleights that you needed, and like heavily dated DVD with the, you know, I think it's the one with the big mustache that he's got in it. So I'd managed to like sort of cull some information from there. There is a point to this story, by the way. I'll get onto the trick in a minute. But I remember I was reading one of the Sadowitz tricks and it said, perform a Neil Elias multiple shift at this point. I was like, oh no, right, that's it, I quit. Like, tap out, I've had enough. I was with you on cover pass, but like, no, I'm done. However, at the time, I didn't know anybody else who was in magic at all. I didn't know anybody. I just had like a few books and like a DVD or something. So then I discovered that there was a magic society in Cardiff where I was living at the time. So I got in touch with them. I was like really excited. Like, oh, I'm into magic. Like, what do I do? Can I join? How does this work? I don't know what a magic society is, but like, this sounds great. So they, the guy who was like their new members guy at the time, a guy called Darren, he said, okay, well, if you're interested, I think he was basically scoping me out and seeing if I was a lunatic or whatever. He said, we'll meet in a bar and we'll have a chat and we'll have a look. So we met in this bar, and I remember this is so bad. The first trick I did for him was the there's a Jerry Sadowitz trick which involves 3 4-letter words, which we won't go into on a public podcast, but it's like one of the most offensive, brutal card tricks ever, which I love. So I did that for him, which I think kind of made him a bit scared. And this is the thing, the trick he did for me was, and this is the first proper card trick I saw a proper magician do, was the Play It Straight Triumph by John Bannon. See, I told you that there was a point to that story and we got there in the end. I'm sorry about wasting your precious moments of your life, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be honest, more gentlemen than ladies listening to this podcast. But we got there in the end. It's the Play It Straight Triumph, which part of my brain came out when I saw that for the first time. Because it's so impossible and so brilliant, and the construction is spot on. There's nothing I can say about that as a card trick that isn't perfect. It is wonderful. And I love John very much. Even now he's like retired from being a lawyer, he looks even more rock and roll, like some like really cool wizard. Like he looks the part and I love him. But that trick is phenomenal. Even to the point where my Magic Castle act that I'd just done, self-plug, but a few weeks ago, the finale of that act was effectively the play it straight triumph, but instead of revealing a suit, it was a phone number. And then they called my number. So somebody in the audience called the phone, and it was, there was a bit in the act where my phone goes off in the beginning, and actually the one that's recorded, it goes off towards the end because I'm an idiot and I forgot to do the bit. But originally it's supposed to be my phone goes off in my pocket. I like pull my phone out, apologize to the audience, like, and play it as like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, this is really embarrassing. Phone goes away. But then at the end of the act, someone shuffles a deck of cards. The cards are spread out and the order of the cards is the phone number of the phone that went off earlier. Again, just to bring it. But it's the method was play it straight triumph. You know?
Yeah. It's great. It's one of those tricks as well, Play It Straight Triumph, where there are certain tricks that are created and they're aimed to fool magicians, but not necessarily do very well in the real world. And then there are tricks that do really well in the real world, but magicians go, meh. Whereas Bannon's Play It Straight plays into both camps, because magicians think they know the plot, therefore they think they know where it's going. And then at the end, when they compute the situation and go, oh no, maybe it's not gone right, then the cards are spread and then they click onto what's going on. It just melts their brain. But
do you remember the first time you saw it?
It would have been many, many, many years ago now. I wouldn't be able to. I think it was Liam that probably showed it to me, if I'm honest.
Yeah, Liam's a big fan of Bannon, as is another friend of mine, Jack Ty, who I'll just give another shout out to, who's a very, very, very good card guy. But yeah, I like I said, I remember them all. And that's kind of the thing with quite a lot of the bits on my list, is I've included them because I remember it so like vividly the first time I saw that, and what it was like to feel that kind of nothing is right with the world anymore. This is just wrong. Thanks to Darren, who was the guy from Cardiff, I don't know if he even does magic anymore. Like through him, I ended up getting like as many of the Bannon books as I could find. I think at the time I only managed to get Smoke and Mirrors and play. And sorry, what was the other one? Demis Fantasy, because Impossibilia was out of print, which of course was the one with the bloody trick in. But I've got everything since, and I just love Bannon. He's a clever guy. And his new one, very hush hush. There's some really, really great stuff in there. If anybody into like just good, well constructed Cardiff, there's some card magic. I mean, sorry, I've got Welsh Tourette's. if anybody's into like that stuff, I mean, Bannon. There we go.
Very, very, very good choice on that one. And that brings us on to your number seven. What's in your seventh position?
Yes. Right. Now, this one I've kind of deliberated on. Because I love tricks, and I love card tricks especially. It's what floats my boat, shall we say. And I've got a huge library of material to draw from. So I wanted to pull something out. There wasn't a marketed item that, obviously I've mentioned quite a few of those, that maybe wasn't obvious. And I've decided to go for The Signed Card by Brother Hammond, which I believe was originally published in Richard's Almanac and then came out in the Secrets of Brother Hammond book. I think it was that way around. If you're not familiar with the trick, effectively what's happened is a card is taken out of the deck and put aside, never to be touched by the magician. Somebody then signs a card. You show the four aces, you drop the aces on top of the assigned card, you snap your fingers, their card has now vanished completely from the aces, and this is a close-up trick as well, vanished completely through the aces, very cleanly shown that you've only got four aces, and the card that was put aside earlier on in the trick is turned over without you actually touching the card physically, and it's the signed card. Like, miracle class card magic. Construction, as with a lot of Hammond stuff. I mean, it's that thing of like a lot of people may be only familiar with Hammond because of the Hammond count, or maybe they've heard of that. But he was a smart guy, really, really clever cookie. And the signed card to me is just a beautiful lesson in trick construction because everything is perfect. And there's been loads of like variations on a theme since. There's a great one, I think, that, God, what's the guy's name? Tom. Oh, no. Got it. His name's. Oh, God. His name's completely escaped me. Who wrote Vortex? The book Vortex?
Tom Stone?
Yes, Tom Stone. Sorry, Tom Stone, if you're listening. Tom Stone has a wonderful version in one of those books. I think it's called Ockerman Now or something like that. Something like that. It's one of those two books. But to me, the original is just, it's perfect. It's pretty much perfect. And the reason it's on this list is, obviously, I love the trick, but just because I'm such a bookworm, hopefully if you have listened to that and you're not a bookworm or would like to be a bookworm, it'll give you something to go and hunt out.
Yeah, our listeners obviously can't see the camera that I'm looking at, but if they were to see, they would see there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 high bookshelf and spanning wall to wall behind you. So I could tell immediately you were a bookworm.
I am a bookworm, and I try not to tell my wife how much all those books cost.
James has got some guitars to the side of him with some very nice Marshall amps. And I said to him that I guarantee that the books behind him are probably worth more than some of them guitars.
Yeah, there's. I mean, what you're looking at there is three full Billy bookcases. They're literally full. Floor to ceiling, and they've got stuff piled on top, and they've got books wedged in between the gaps as well. But that's like, so going back to the Play It Straight Triumph thing, that was 2006. And I think at that point I own 3 books, and it's just grown since then to, I don't know how many are there. I don't know how much they cost. I should really insure them, but yeah.
And that brings us on to your last trick. What's in your final position?
I can't believe time has slipped away through our fingers and we're here eventually. If anybody's still listening, more power to you, because I imagine this is stronger. This is probably stronger sedative than ZQL or melatonin. Just listen to my podcast. Here we go. So fun fact, just on that, I don't even know why I'm saying this. I'm waffling now. Apologies, you can edit this out. I was a music lecturer for a long time, for like 10 years. I was a music and music technology lecturer at a college. And I love a nap as much as the next person. I love naps. I love a daytime nap. And one of my favorite things to do after a long day lecturing would be to come in and put the DVD set on of a certain mentalist who shall remain not anonymous, and skip the performances, go straight to the explanations, and fall blissfully asleep to the boring monotony of someone discussing billet routines. It was just the best sleep drug ever. You've never, experienced melatonin like you have sitting through a 15-minute equivoque explanation. So there we go. Or equivoque, if you want to go that way. Anyway, that's just a side note. So the last trick is totally self-celebratory, if that is a word. It's one of mine. It would be remiss of me not to mention something that I came up with. And I come up with a lot of stuff. I don't release hardly anything. And of the stuff I do come up with, most of it ends up in the bin after like 10 minutes because I never think it's good enough. And there's just so much stuff out there, so much good stuff. Why would I perform anything of mine, right? But there's a few things that I've come up with that I think are worthy of note. One of them being, I know Dave mentioned it on his list, which was a few months ago now, so you'll have to go back and dig it up. We've just put a project out called Procession, and there's a trick on there called Color Sense, which is my take on the color sense, I don't know if I just played that. My take on the color sense routine is called More Than a Feeling. Sorry, I didn't name the trick. So Dave named the trick. So it's my version on that, which is super clean, no memory work. It's a shuffle deck. And it's pretty cool as far as that plot goes. However,
it's
not using that trick.
Very, very clever. I have seen it and it's very smart.
Oh, thank you very much. And it's not hideously boring either, which is fun. unlike billet explanations. So the trick that I've chosen to go on there is, I believe, part of my Alakazam Academy, what I did, which is 5 years ago this year. I can't believe that it was 5 years ago, but I did an Alakazam Academy, which I think sold at least 4 or 5 copies. It's on there. It's called St. Elmo's Opener. I think it's on there. And it is my sort of, I don't want to say take or variation, but my take or variation on the Chicago opener plot, which is a plot that I absolutely love. And I should just say for the record as well, I perform the original method that we all know and love exactly how it was first published, because I just think it's brilliant. And I've got my own script to it, which I'm not going to tell you because meh, why not? But it's great. And 9 times out of 10, when I perform that trick, I'm doing the original method. However, if I'm not feeling lazy, then I will do my variation on it, which is, it doesn't feel like Chicago opener anymore. I think I've taken it about as far away from Chicago opener as you can go while still retaining some of the same sort of methodology and, well, not even methodology, but the same kind of effect. Effectively, this is what happens. Somebody selects a card from a deck. They remember the card, as they do. It goes back in the deck. The spectator holds the deck of cards face up in their hand at fingertips. I take a lighter out of my pocket. I wave the lighter underneath the cards. Then when they spread through, they can see one card has a scorch mark on it, and it is the card they just picked. Then somebody thinks of a card. The card that was previously scorched on the back is held by the person who originally sort of took that card, and now the person who's thinking of the card face down, so they can see the scorch mark on the back. A lighter is taken out and waved underneath the card, and then when it's turned over, the image of the thought of card is now burned into the selection, which is basically still Chicago opener. But what I like about it is, in, I hope I explained that right. Somebody selects a card, is burned on the back. Somebody thinks of a card, and then the image of the card is burned onto the face of the card. And what I like about it is, at the end of your regular Chicago opener routine, which I love, just, I got into trouble at a magic society once I was lecturing at, because I had the audacity to say that something was not perfect with the original Chicago opener, which it is. So don't burn me. At the end of the regular version, you end up with a card, a playing card. So if you were to keep that card and show it to anybody else that you ever encounter to say, I saw this magician, he did this really cool trick, all you have to show for it is a blue back card or a red back card. There's no story attached to that physical object. Whereas with mine, what I wanted was, I wanted an impossible object that somebody could take with them. So when they showed somebody else and explained what they'd seen, they could both examine this impossible object. And all of a sudden it's a thing that they can sort of remember. It's a very, very strong trick. I think Mark Elston put it in one of his Hidden Gems books, which I was really chuffed with because I love Mark. It's yours if you want it on Alakazam Academy.
But now we get on to the final two items. And arguably these are the two more difficult, because behind you, you have several hundred, if not more, books to choose from, but you're only allowed one on your island. So what was the book that you chose?
Right, now, let's chat, because this is genuinely the hardest bit. So for the book, this is so difficult, and I will change my mind as soon as we finish the podcast. So if I'm allowed to break the rules, or at least bend them slightly, okay, and you can tell me whether or not I'm allowed to do that, I would take the entire Apocalypse collection. So the 4 hardbound books of Apocalypse, and count them as one. However, I'm aware that 4 massive hardbound books of material is probably stretching it a little bit too far. But if I had my druthers, that would be the one I would take. However, I'm going to guess, you're shaking your head at me, so I'm going to guess I'm not allowed to do that.
So we've had other people want to take 3 of one series of books, and I will not allow it. So if you did take them, I would get you to take just one of them, but then most people go, but it's a collection, so I wouldn't take them, I would choose something else.
So in that case, my Desert Island book would be Honourable Mention to Card Zones by Jerry Sadowitz, Honourable Mention to Smoke and Mirrors by John Bannon, and God, do you know what? I'm kind of looking behind me, which probably isn't good for the microphone, but there are so many great books by incredible thinkers up there. I could just choose the James file, which is like 8 billion pages. But my Desert Island book is going to be 52 Memories by Jack Parker. And I'm going to guess I'm probably the only person to mention that one.
You are to date, yes.
To date. I never got to meet Jack Parker. Unfortunately, he's passed away now, but I am good friends with Andy Gladwin. And I remember when he put this out many, many years ago, I think he'd show me a few of the tricks. I knew he showed me I Know Kung Fu from there, and I just thought it was great. And he showed me another one. I can't remember what it is, but I bought it at a Blackpool convention like as soon as I possibly could. Like I made a beeline for that stand. And what's funny is I remember at the stand was David Solomon, you know, David Solomon of David Solomon's A Car Genius fame. He was there and I approached him really excitedly. And I think he probably thought I was going to ask for his book. But I didn't, because I think he was on, like, I don't know why it was on that stand, but they had copies of Jack Parker's book. I was like, oh my God, I need that book. So I'm not really slightly deflated at that point that I was really excited about a book that was nice. I should just say, by the way, I have met Dave since. I was lucky enough to be on the DVD with the BBM did. And can I say, just as a side note, being on that DVD, it's the only time I've ever been fooled by the explanation of a trick. There's this one trick on there that he explained on camera, and I dutifully nodded and agreed. And then as soon as we stopped filming, I was like, nah, I have no idea how that works. Do it again. Like, what? What? Because the method was so clever. So David Solomon's Car Genius. However, the Jack Parker book is phenomenal because, as I said, I never got to meet Jack in person. Friends of mine did, and apparently he was a lovely guy, and it's a real shame that he's not around to share more magic. But it's absolutely my taste. It's well-constructed, well-designed, sleight-of-hand magic that, for the most part, only uses a regular deck of cards. The plots are new and interesting, or if it is a take on another plot, then it's like one of the best versions of that plot. Like, there's a trick in there called Hoff City, which is, I think, the best version of the Hoss and Zeiss problem that I've ever seen. It's a great, great book. It's a beautiful book. I know they've reissued it in the same format that they did the follow-up book. The name escapes me right now, the second Jack Parker book. Oh, 52 Explorations. Sorry, I just saw it on the bookcase. Personally, I think the first edition is a much more beautiful book, and I'm glad I've got a first edition. It's beautiful. I love it. So that is my Desert Island book, after much deliberation.
Very, very good choice. And that leads us onto your curveball item, which we never know where this is going to go. Your non-magic item that you use for magic.
Right. Now, I'm going to bend the rules on this one as well. Because my impulse was just to say phone. And I'm sure lots of people have just said phone because of all the wonderful apps you can use, of which I own a lot of them and use hardly any. They're just taking up space on my phone. So then I was thinking, well, what else can I take? And I thought, well, a wallet. Wallet would kind of be a good shout, but I could kind of live without my wallet, especially on a desert island. So I would take a guitar. As you can see, there are a number of them hanging on the wall beside me, and I've been playing for 30... God, I'm so old. I've been playing like over 30 years, let's just say over 30 years. So I don't think I could exist with one that wasn't within arm's reach at any one point. Whether or not I could do magic with it, I could probably invent a trick here or there with it. However, that is my non-magic item. And if you had a gun to my head, I'd figure out some magic thing to do with it. But other than that, I just play lots of Steve Vai stuff.
Broken and restored string. There you go.
I had an idea. I'm going to say this and somebody's going to hear it and then come up with a bloody method for it and do me. But I was originally trying to work on a method which was borrowed ring to guitar string. So like a Lincoln ring thing onto a guitar string.
That would be cool.
Yes. Especially if they could choose the string.
Yeah.
However, the only methods that I really came up with were so convoluted and it meant that you couldn't actually play the guitar. So the dream method would be I could still play the guitar with the ring attached. So there you go. That's a magic trick you can do with the guitar.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I sort of guessed that you would have said guitar. We have had grand piano. I think it was Richard Jones. But Richard Jones has just... So he has a new trick in his current touring show, which I have yet to see, unfortunately. that is designed for the grand piano. So
nice. Is he actually tall with a bloody grand piano? That's a big old prop.
So he actually put a video on his socials the other day, and it's sort of like a pop-up mini grand. So it sort of folds into itself, and then you can pop it all all open. Not quite that little. It's not quite Yamaha, one of those mini keyboards that you used to get when you were a kid that used to sound like a computer game,
which
I used to love them. But yeah, it's really clever. It just sort of folds out, and then he sort of puts it up. But I've not seen the trick that he's come up with it. I think it would be interesting to see.
Just as a side note, I don't own the Burglars book anymore, which is a shame. I sold it a few years ago. But obviously, it's just got so many brilliant tricks in there. But the one that springs to mind is Burglars had a disappearing piano trick, which I don't know if you've read the Burglars book, but it's genius the way it works. And of course, like, it's David Burglars, so it's genius, right? But the idea is that he would be appearing at a banquet or something, and the band would be playing, and the music would be playing on the piano, and then he would take the stage, the piano would still be playing, and then all of a sudden you would draw attention to the piano and there was no piano there.
Nice.
It would have disappeared during the performance, which is like, who thinks of that? Yeah, that's pretty cool. So I don't know if Richard's doing the same thing. I don't know Richard, but yeah. It's cool to do like tricks with music. I had a few ideas for other things as well, but I won't talk about them now because somebody might take them.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your list. It's such a good collection of effects, and it also means that Dave Forrest will not be beating you up anytime soon.
Which I'm glad. I mean, I find it hard to believe that anybody has made it this far through. So look, if they made it past In a Flash, well done. But here we go.
If people want to find out more about you, James, where can they go?
The police database for violent crimes. That's a good place to start. No, I don't know. I don't really have a great deal of stuff out. I mean, I've got some stuff out with BBM, so maybe look at Big Blind Media's website. Or I've got that thing out with Dave at the moment, so look at Full 52. My website is just www.jameswent.co.uk. There's nothing much on there for magicians, really. It's more for like gigs and stuff. And if you wanted to give me a little follow on the old socials, probably the best one is Instagram, which would be at James Went, which is just one word, easy peasy. But yeah, I do have a YouTube channel. There's some, like, my magic castle hacks are on there, but you know, find it if you want to.
And I recommend checking out James's BBM stuff as well. As a long time BBM fan, I've got pretty much everything of BBM's. And yeah, it's all phenomenal. So do go and check it out.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, James. Hopefully people will find you. And as always, thank you so much for listening. If you have enjoyed this, then please make sure you leave a review on whatever platform you're on, because that really helps us bump up. And also tell your magician friends if you can as well, because that helps word of mouth get around. And with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of Desert Island Tricks. Bye-bye.
Hi, Peter Nardi here, and I really hope you enjoyed that podcast. I just wanted to make you know that Alakazam have their own app. You can download it from the App Store or the Google Play Store. By downloading the app, it will make your shopping experience even slicker at Alakazam. You'll also get exclusive in-app offers and in-app live streams. So go download it now, and we'll see you on the next podcast.